Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the gene pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. He is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
We welcome you in to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, Cole Pepper here, Jaguars Central, Joe Fortunato at the controls, coming off the preseason opener and heading into the preseason home opener, which is Friday with the Atlanta Falcons and Mike Smith coming to town. We'll talk about that game here a little bit later on, but we're into it now, Gene. Here we go. You got a game's worth of film for you and the scouts and the coaches to pour over. What do you think of the first week?
Well, it was a win for the scouts. It's one of those games where you have 90 players on the roster. You get an opportunity to truly evaluate some of the down-the-line guys at some of the bubble positions. I know for the fans, it's not the type of game that you like because you always want to win. But again, from a scout's perspective, it was a winning effort for us to be able to evaluate.
All right, so you got a lot of guys in there. And one of the things that wasn't talked about much beforehand, and I don't know that it would have been, but a lot of guys who you would say were second half of the roster right now, guys who stack up from, say, 45 to 90, got a lot of snaps in that ball game, really for both teams. I mean, New England played very few starters throughout the thing. Did you utilize that first game in a different way? And you know, fans look at the final score, they say, well, you know, didn't see a touchdown, and they may have a particular perception of it. But I think you're looking at it much differently as a preseason game.
We do. I'm not saying that all the frontline starter positions are locked in, but when a scout's looking at a game and players in particular at bubble positions or what I call the hot spots on the roster, it might be the battle for the third corner, it might be the battle for the third tight end, it might be for the fifth receiver, it might be for the sixth linebacker. Do you keep five defensive ends and four defensive tackles or five defensive tackles and four defensive ends? There's a lot of things that come into play, and you have a number of guys battling for each of those spots, which are role players, in essence, on your football team. And was a good night to see some of the competition taking place at those spots.
It was also a night to see a lot of new faces in Jaguars uniforms out on the field playing with the team. I want to touch on a couple of the guys, the new veterans in particular, and also, of course, the quarterback. We'll get to that in just a moment. But Paul Posluszny, Clint Session, DeJuan Landry, Drew Coleman, Jason Spitz, some of those guys who were new additions throughout the course of the very short free agency period. What did you think of their first appearances in Jaguars uniform?
I thought it was a good first impression. The thing that I liked is you had some guys who played fast. For all of those players coming in here on a short window, to see them fly around at the speed and then the awareness to anticipate, to get to the ball, whether it was Clint forcing two fumbles, mm-hmm. Whether it was, you know, DeJuan Landry getting a jump on the ball, whatever it was from an awareness standpoint, it was very good to see some veteran presence out there added to what we had at times in the game.
Well, there was a hit that Landry put on a running back early in the ball game. I don't remember which running back it was, but coming off the defensive right side. And, I mean, you can see he is the guy who doesn't mind putting his nose in there and lowering the shoulder.
No question. He's the guy that actually recovered the fumble.
Yep, that's right. So those are some of the new guys. Going into the game, of course, fans and media alike looking at how would Blaine Gabbert perform in his first pro action, the first taste of the NFL. What do you think?
Well, I liked what I saw. We could have helped him on a couple of catches that would have enabled us to continue some drives. We might have been able to put one or two into the end zone, but overall, in terms of clock management, personnel management, I thought he did a good job. I thought he stepped up in the pocket a couple times, made a couple outstanding throws, and then on the move, he was able to do so as well. So a good first start.
Any sign of jitters or anxiousness from him, over-anxiousness maybe on his first start? Did you see any of that?
I didn't. I'm sure there was some of that, you know, going into a game, I think, for every player, especially a young player, yet you do have that until you get into the flow of the game, maybe the first hit or the first completion for him. The one thing about him that people got to understand, I mean, you're talking about someone that's 6'4 and a half, he's 238 pounds, and he has run sub-4.6, so he's a mobile quarterback, and he's a guy that does run to throw. He doesn't just run to run. And a lot of guys who aren't as mobile, if people aren't open, they're going to throw the ball away, which he'll do some. But the other asset he has is he can take off and run with the ball. And, you know, he did that well a couple times. And I think a couple other times he wishes he would have got rid of the ball because the guys close on him quicker at this level than in college.
It would have been interesting. I mean, you always say, you know, what if? But it would have been interesting to see what would have happened had Mercedes Lewis been in there, Maurice Jones-Drew, to see – having a full complement, how defenses would have reacted differently and what they would have done. Again, I was back here at Jaguar Central and watching on TV like most of the rest of the fans. It didn't appear that New England was doing anything too complex defensively. They're playing pretty vanilla in that first game.
Yeah, I think both teams were. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, there's a number of plays in the game, again, that if you make the tackle, you make the catch, there's a completely different result on some of those drives. But that's football, and you get what you earn.
How about some of the draft picks? Will Rackley got the start at left guard. We saw Rod Isaac a little bit later on. Both Cecil Shorts and Chris Brzezinski did not play, and we want to talk about them a bit here a little later. But Rackley certainly got plenty of time in there at left guard.
He did a good job. You know, I've said that really from day one. He's come in here and approached it very businesslike, and he's held his own at a difficult position to play as a rookie. You know, next to the quarterback position, offensive line has the most technique and footwork and really fundamentals to be taught. And so I'm very happy for him for what he's done.
Slow learning curve for that position. I mean, it's not – sometimes you see a guy – defensive back or linebacker who all of a sudden the light goes on and he gets it now. That usually it takes a slower, more gradual learning curve with those offensive linemen, doesn't it?
It does. The one thing he has, though, he has Brad Meester, who makes our line calls. So in the front calls, whether it's in the run game or certainly the pass protections, he's IDing the mic and making the calls. And also, you know, our quarterbacks do some of that as well. But in regards to having, you know, an experienced veteran center to your right and then Eugene Monroe coming into his third year on the left, I think it's a comfort level for him to have good communication on both sides.
All right. One of the guys really popped out at me, undrafted, and you have a great track record of bringing in undrafted players. For years, the Jaguars have found those undrafteds guys who were, you know, hidden gems, or maybe a guy who would have been an eighth-round pick had there been eight rounds, that sort of thing. But Richard Murphy, the young running back from LSU, who was kind of caught in a numbers game, I think, at LSU. Well, he had one run in particular that really jumped out at me, running off to the left side over near the sideline and lowered the shoulder. And I love to see guys run with power and finish runs, and that's exactly what he did.
He did do a nice job. You know, you're correct. LSU has put a number of backs into the NFL. And they've all done well, whether it's a feature back or a companion back or a specialty back. And, you know, he's still got a lot to learn, but what he showed the other night is he's certainly got some things that he can develop even more into being a better player.
He has quite a story, too, in his personal background, and we'll get into that on Friday night. He'll be our feature in the undrafted feature in the tailgate show. Our coverage will start at 4:30 and kick off at 7:30 here. One guy who did not play but will soon and has been practicing is the newcomer. We were kind of talking about the, well, it will happen eventually thing. We knew it was a matter of time. But Matt Roth, you got signed up. Let's talk a little bit more about him and what you expect him to be able to add to the Jaguars' defensive line. A free agent signing, a guy who's been around the league for a little bit, most recently with Cleveland but also with Miami.
Well, here's a guy that was a defensive end in college in a 4-3 front. And just like Jason Babin, who was a defensive end in college, Matt Roth got 30 sacks at Iowa. He comes to the NFL. Jason Babin comes to the NFL. They play him as a 3-4 outside backer. Really, we feel, you know, through his time in the NFL in getting 20 sacks, he's done it in a way that is probably not playing to his strength. I mean, this guy is best when you put his hand on the ground and let him go get the ball. So he's always been affected throughout his career the closer he lined to the ball. So if you're dropping him and playing him up in a two-point, I feel like you're not getting his best. I feel like he'll come in here and certainly stuff to run and give us a good compliment with Campman at the right end to create more rush.
All right, we have each and every week the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week, and it's a chance for you to see if you can match wits with the GM. And here's how it works. The qualifications for the Scout's Eye Unsung Player is the guy who didn't necessarily make the biggest play or didn't get the highlight play, but who did the little things and maybe stood out, a guy who might jump out using a little more of a critical eye toward things. If you think you know who this week's Scout's Eye Unsung Player is, you can put your guess in, and you could be a winner. Do it via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Just go under the Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith thread that has already started and growing fast. Or you can do it via Twitter. Just tweet to me, Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R. And the first correct answer will be our winner here this week. All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll get you an injury update, plus talk a little bit about what's to come and a couple of announcements. One that will come, the littlest Jaguar now in the fold. We'll talk about that. And Gene got some nice national press. We'll talk about that as well. I don't know if he's seen it yet or not. Not yet. All right, I'll unveil it. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. More Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, Cole Pepper, and the general manager here. Time for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care, and the best injury update I can give you right now is that a lot of guys who missed time last week getting back on the practice field, including David Garrard, who has been practicing with the team and saying he's expecting to be in there on Friday night against the Atlanta Falcons. Garrard also admitted earlier in the weekend that it's a bit of a disc problem he's dealing with, but something he's had, you know, nagging back problems ongoing, so we'll keep an eye out there. Maurice Jones-Drew's been practicing, Aaron Campman, and a lot of questions. I actually got one afterwards about Clint Session, who left the game with a head injury. And anytime you hear the phrase questionable with a head, you kind of, oh, geez. And, but he was clear to go back in the game, but did not because it was a preseason game, and was good to go as far as that's concerned on Thursday night, trying to get all the days right. We used to have Saturday, Thursday, or something like that, or Saturday, Friday, Thursday in the preseason. Now we've got a Thursday and a Friday and a Saturday. I'll catch up eventually. It'll be only a matter of time. Some guesses coming in on our Scout's Eye Unsung Player. Twitter, you can just tweet it to me, Cole Pepper, or on Facebook, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. Last week, you mentioned that there were 6 to 10 spots that were potentially up for grabs. I know you want to clarify what you meant by that. Whether it was players, what are we looking at? I mean, how set is this roster at this point? Where they are, maybe not as much as who they are.
Well, when I said 6 to 10, just to be more specific, is what I said earlier. You know, it may not be frontline starters, not that they're all locked in place, but when you look at the third tight end, or you look at the sixth linebacker, there's spots in your roster where certainly the normal fan wouldn't look at it in the same way maybe a scout would as you're building your roster.
And so at this point, I think it's clear to see that the level of competition top to bottom has improved. I mean, the final score may not have been the indicator of that, but if you watch those guys, I mean, you've got more positions where there's more competition for those last spots on the roster than there were a year, two, 3 years ago, don't you think?
That's correct.
All right, you can jump in here via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars, as well as Twitter. You can tweet here to me. All right, we mentioned a couple of announcements. One is that Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie is a father. So congratulations. This was the smallest Jaguar, young Jacob Scobie.
Congratulations.
Born to Josh and Melissa. And not sure if he's soccer style or straight on style. We'll have to see how that develops. We do know that he did come out as a barefoot kicker. So that's otherwise we would have been real worried. The other one, this is, I mentioned, sort of a national compliment for you. This is from Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback, which has become kind of an essential read around the league, is one of the things that just about everybody takes a look at. Talking about his travels, he'll be here on Friday, and he says, I've got a lot of respect for GM Gene Smith's team building, and there's much I need to learn about some of the young Jags prospects. So there's the compliment that you had not yet seen. I know you're not exactly one who scours the media to see who's complimenting you. You're pretty focused on what you're doing, but nice to see a national writer of Peter King's stature noticing what's going on here.
Well, I think it's a good thing for the city to get noticed, you know, not just the Jaguar organization. I think this is an up-and-coming city with an up-and-coming team.
All right. The other note that we wanted to pass along that just before the break here at the bottom of the hour, we'll name our winner. We do have some interesting guesses on the Scout's Eye already coming in. Also coming up after the bottom of the hour, the Gene Pool will examine the offensive tackle position a little bit more closely. Week two in the preseason, is it a you utilize it differently than you utilize week one from a scouting perspective, from a team-wide perspective?
Well, I think both. Certainly it's a little bit more defined as you get into each game because, you know, players start to sort themselves out for scouts by how they perform. And I think from a coaching standpoint, and this is around the league, it's not specific to the Jaguars, you know, usually the second and third preseason game, your starters are going to get a lot more play time. So I think from a fan standpoint, they'll really like this game Friday night.
And, of course, with Mike Smith coming in, the Falcons figure to be one of the four or five top teams in the NFC. We know Matt Ryan is a terrific quarterback, and they've added some weapons in the offseason as well in the draft, and so we'll see how that all plays out. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those key matchups a little bit later on. Let's get to some of the things that people are noticing and wondering about, and that most specifically with the wide receivers. That was something that we touched on last week, but the fans are somewhat clamoring for, hey, why didn't we go after another wide receiver? Why didn't you bring in a wide receiver? First thought would be that Cecil Shorts was a draft pick wide receiver and figures to be out there on the field on Friday.
Boy, he had a good practice last night. He's had some good practices early on until his soft tissue injury. What I would say, you can compete at the highest level and not have what most people would consider an elite receiver like an Andre Johnson. There's a number of teams that have won Super Bowls with a good group of receivers. And I go back to our receiving group when you talk about outside receivers, tight ends, and running backs. You know, New England didn't win a Super Bowl with Randy Moss, and Randy Moss was an elite receiver. I think you can go through the history of Super Bowl winners and see that you can win a lot of different ways. And I feel like we have some players who may not be established yet, but will this year.
Yeah, and what you start thinking, every offseason it seems there's a clamoring for some wide receiver. I blame part of it on fantasy football. And, you know, while there are some that are deep into it, I'm not much of a fantasy football guy, but I do realize that when guys score touchdowns, you recognize that. So the Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, Chad Ochocinco, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and on and on. You know, you'd love to be able to get somebody like an Andre Johnson or a Calvin Johnson, somebody, you know, young, big stud, productive, good character guy, all these things. But bringing in wide receivers, for whatever reason, molding them into the fabric of a team can be more difficult than it is for some other positions, it seems.
Well, I think there's some truth to that. I admire the teams that find ways to win the Super Bowl. I mean, every year your talent pool changes. And like I said, there's a lot of different ways to win in this league. Just like there's a lot of different ways for the three of us here to drive down to Tampa. I really believe that you find ways to win with what you have, and we will.
All right. The time now to announce who the pick was as the Scout's Eye unsung player, and we had at least one correct, maybe two, one on Twitter and one on Facebook. Who was your Scout's Eye unsung player of the game?
Well, Kyle Bosworth, he came in and really did a nice job against the run and against the pass. He had a play on the ball, and he had eight tackles. And he's a guy that came off IR and kind of worked his way into, playing time last Thursday night. And I feel like he started to show that last year prior to his injury, and it was nice to see him get back out on the field and make some plays for us.
To this point, his claim to fame probably for most fans is his bloodlines, his uncle, of course, Brian Bosworth. And we actually have three correct picks on that I found so far. So what we'll do during the regular season, when we will be giving away some autographed footballs that will be autographed by both Gene and whoever was the unsung player that week, if you pick it, all the correct answers that come in before we announce, we will we'll draw out the winner and give it away.
But once again, that's in season only.
In season. Right now, it's preseason for everybody.
So who you got over there?
So
random pick.
A random pick for our winner. I'm going to go to a guy named, he tweeted to me. Bark Marley is his Twitter handle. must be a dog lover. I don't know.
Congratulations, Bark.
Well done. And for the others, well done on the unsung hero pick. All right, we'll take time out. Come back with a Gene Pool. We take a look at the offensive tackle position. There's the Scout's Eye calling from high above. And we'll review some of the rules and get some of your questions on Facebook and Twitter as well. Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. And if you want to tweet to me at Cole Pepper, get the best questions thrown in there. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. You can join the conversation, Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars or via Twitter. Gene, I'm already seeing that some media types are picking up on the show and tweeting the unsung player comments. The Scout's Eye is already going big in just the second week. You can become a part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program with Jaguars Advantage. Season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, coming up, we'll dissect some of the new rules and get to some of your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter. But first, time for us to jump into the Gene Pool. And, of course, each and every week we dissect one position from the scout's perspective. This week, the offensive tackle position. Average size in the NFL coming in 6'5", 300, running a 5'2", 40. Or that's the information I had. You had pretty close to the same numbers as I did last week. Do you have different numbers this week?
Well, at the combine this past year, the average height was 6.057. Again, if you like him, it's 6'6". Mm-hmm. And 316 pounds, running a 5'3", 1. So that's the averages coming out of the combine. Now, in the NFL, an average left tackle starter is 6'6", 314, running 5'1", 7, and then a right tackle is 6'05", 5'3", 18, running 5'2", 7.
All right, so little taller and faster on the left side, as you might expect, a little more athletic to block that to speed rusher from the outside. What's the ideal size for a left tackle if you could build the prototype?
Well, I think most of them are at least 6'5". I think you can almost be too tall. So usually between 6'5 and 6'7". Tony was a 6'7 guy. Mm-hmm. Tony was a rare player, and I rarely say rare in player personnel. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the left tackle, it certainly is a skill position in my mind. It's different than the other four offensive line positions because of the athlete that you're lining up against. You're blocking the premier pass rusher on the opposing team. A lot of times you're one-on-one. I mean, you're on an island, certainly at the left tackle, blocking the blind side of your quarterback if you have a right-handed quarterback. And the one thing about the tackles, you'd like to have at least 34-inch arms, guys that can steer and control the pass rusher and steer him wide of the pocket.
I was going to say arm length. You know, we talk sometimes about the 40 versus the 10 or you bench press versus the vertical, and the arm length might be one of the most key things in terms of the measurables for a tackle.
It does. If you don't have great feet, if you have great hands, it allows your feet to catch up. So you got to have good timing with your punch. You got good hand placement. You certainly got to be good on your feet, and scouts would say light on your feet. Mm-hmm. You got to be a knee bender, not a waist bender. If you start getting top heavy in your pass set, you're going to be giving up an edge to a defender. And then, you know, we always talk about mirror and slide ability, the ability to keep your body in front of that pass rusher and the quarterback.
All right, so what about the non-measurables? You mentioned a few of them there, but in terms of approach, personality, intelligence, that sort of thing, what do you want out of that position?
Well, the left tackle, I don't want to say it's a finesse position, but typically the left tackle is a little bit better pass blocker, and the right tackle is a little bit better of a run blocker. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll go back to Tony Pacelli again so I can toot his horn. He was a former Jaguar great. He could do both, and that's difficult to find, somebody that can do both. But he didn't just have these genetic gifts. If you were out at practice, I mean, he was a come early, stay late. He really honed his skills as a player. So, you know, you can have all the physical gifts, the mental gifts, but if you don't work to maximize your talent, you'll never be the great player that you could be.
All right. And so in our who is best category here, current, all time, whatever you like, who are the tackles or who is the tackle that stands out?
Well, let me say the last 20 years, I'll put Tony Pacelli in a category with Jonathan Ogden, Orlando Pace, and Walter Jones. Mm-hmm. Those four, to me, at least in my scouting time in the NFL, were the four best. Okay, so they're in a category of their own, really.
And all a little bit different kind of builds, too. Ogden was, 6'9", something like that?
I don't know if he was taller than Tony. I don't know if he was 6'9". He might have been listed in the media guide. But he was about Tony's height, and he was a great player. Same with Orlando Pace. Yep. He was another tall guy. Yep. And then Walter Jones might have been an inch shorter than that group. But, you know, that would be in the last 20. I would say in the last 10 years, it'd be Joe Thomas, mm-hmm. Michael Ruse, kind of an underrated guy for the Titans, Jordan Gross for mm-hmm. Carolina. And then Ryan Clady, I know he tore his Achilles tendon, I believe, 2 years ago, and he's not back to what he was. But Joe Thomas would probably be the guy right now in terms of, you know, the left tackle in particular that, you know, he's got good pass pro technique, good footwork. You know, he's a good run blocker. Like I said, maybe the best run blocking left tackle would be Jake Long.
I was going to mention Long.
Would say he's a right tackle playing left tackle down there because they put a great emphasis on the run game. But, you know, I don't want to leave him out, but he's probably the best run blocker.
Okay. Those are the best going right now from Gene Smith. And each and every week we will dive into the Gene Pool. Next week it's strong safety. We'll take a look at that position here on Jaguars Monday. All right, time now to get some of your questions and comments with Facebook and Twitter, and Joe Fortunato has some from Facebook.
Yeah, we get social with Copy Facts. The question is from Will. Gene, why didn't we make a push for another wide receiver, and are we looking for one via trade?
Well, I'd always looked to upgrade a roster, and I'm not probably as interested in giving up draft picks for a player, but if we could match player for player to where we could be good for each other, you know, us and another team, I would certainly listen to that. We do monitor the waiver wire year-round. But, again, I understand where the fans are coming from. They haven't been out to all the practices. I mean, they're closed now to the public, which they typically are around the NFL at this point in the preseason. We have some players making some plays that aren't getting probably enough opportunities because there's only one ball in preseason games. And so I think, you know, we have some guys that are growing to what the fans want here. And, you know, I'm pleased with some of the guys we have.
And one of the guys who was a weapon for you on offense, and not a wide receiver, but really showed himself well in special teams, was Deji Kareem, who had the 84-yard kickoff return. We saw him flash some of that last year as well. Another guy who's got some ability to go along with it.
He sure does. The one thing I'm proud of Deji is his blocking. That's the one area from a year ago that he's improved. And he's lower to the ground like Maurice, and he can pack a punch. And he's done a good job here in the preseason thus far.
So lower to the ground is a phrase that I'm sure both he and Maurice appreciate. Low to the ground.
Well, they might be short, but they're not small.
Yep.
I mean, they certainly play bigger than what they are. And a guy that's lower to the ground typically has greater balance. They're tough to find. They're pile poppers.
Yep. And they both had some big plays already. All right, we'll take time out, come back, take a look at this coming week's game on Friday against the Falcons here in Jacksonville. Take more of your tweets and Facebook questions as well for the general manager, Gene Smith. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues right here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Final segment here. Remember that on Friday night, the preseason home opener, we'll begin our coverage at, I think I said 4:30, 5 o'clock, right? 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock kickoff. 5 o'clock start, 8 o'clock kickoff for the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show. And we'll be outside during the tailgate show, outside Gate 1, as we usually are. So come on by and say hi. There's a question on Twitter for you, Gene. Wondering who the backup linebacker is and how that position looks.
Well, the guy working there right now is Russell Allen. But Russell Allen's played all three linebacker positions. But he's right behind Paz. And then we have a number of other guys that can cross-train and play there as well. So we feel like that's a healthy competition there at the backup linebacker spots, all three.
Well, not the least of which is Darryl Smith, who, you know, when you have depth at linebacker, you kind of find who fits best where in that combination if somebody goes down. Darryl's been a terrific middle linebacker when he's played there.
He has. And, again, probably playing to his strength, you know, he would tell you, I certainly believe it, that Sam's his best position, and he's had a good camp thus far, but he's played all three.
Yep.
So we have, like I said, a number of guys that can play multiple positions there in that position group.
All right, we teased this a little bit last week, some of the new rules, and we've seen now 1 week of preseason games with some of these. I want to get your thoughts on how this is going to affect things. Starting with the kickoff rule, they moved the kickoff back to the 30, back to the 35 from the 30, and although the Bears didn't want to go along with that for about the first half of the game they had the other night. They were kicking it off from the 30, but we're seeing a ton of touchbacks. Do you just kick it through the end zone now, or do you pooch it? I mean, how's this going to change the game?
Well, obviously, what the league was trying to do is, with less returns, it would result in less collisions. I would say now that all NFL kickers can put the ball into the end zone. I think teams with a great kickoff returner may give their returner the green light to bring it out from five deep now. I think you'll see some of that, and it's been obvious even in the preseason in some of the games. You're seeing guys bring it out deep from in the end zone. I mean, we did that ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think teams with good kickoff coverage units and a kicker who can place the ball, you know, inside the numbers and inside the five will still try to pin returners inside the 20. I don't think they'll change their philosophy.
The ideal kick really almost is like a yard or two deep where you have to – they've got to make a decision, isn't it? I mean, at this point, kick it high and let it come down near the end, near the goal line.
Right, but the teams with better returners are going to let that guy bring it out.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, if you have a placement kicker, like, you know, we've had a placement punter, you know, a directional guy that can do a good job. If you have good coverage units, you might want to, you know, back people up inside the 20. I would say this, though. If you got a kicker that can blow it out the back of the end zone, you're going to probably blow it out the back of the end zone.
You take the 20 almost every time,
wouldn't
you?
Right, especially if you're facing one of the elite returners in the NFL. So It's changed, you know, the strategy somewhat as to what teams would do, but most teams are going to play to the strength of their personnel, and so that's what you'll see game to game.
Is it the end of the kickoff specialist?
Well, it might be, yes.
Not every team's doing that, but
no,
there,
there
or
used
six
to be, but yeah, not like maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So, I think that's a valid point.
One of the other big changes is that every play involving a score will be reviewed upstairs and may be subject to being reviewed downstairs if the replay official says, "Yeah, you might want to take a look at this thing." And we saw that several times over the course of the over the first week of the preseason.
I think this is a good rule change. The coaches, they do have two challenges, but during the two-minute warning period, overtime period, and after all scores, the replay official in the booth will initiate all reviews. Now, this is somewhat similar to college football, and I think it does three things. It you know, picks up the pace of the game. I think the other thing it does is the referee at times is involved in calls that are being reviewed, and you don't want a conflict of interest. And certainly he was the guy reviewing it on the field. And like I said, picking up the pace, I mean, this guy, depending on where the ball was spotted, he had to run all the way across, look at the monitor to review the play. Then I think the other thing is it removes the emotion of the sideline, you know, the intensity of the game. So you take it upstairs, and I think overall, it'll be a better process.
Those are probably the two biggest, most obvious changes in the rules that we will see this year. There's some other ones. We may touch on them next week as well. I want to spend a little bit of time, though, talking about Friday's game with the Falcons. What kind of a matchup do you expect? And you mentioned earlier you expect to see more of the regulars for both teams in their playing more extended minutes.
Well, like you said, a lot of people consider the Atlanta Falcons one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the NFL. And they do have a quality quarterback. I would say some of the matchups to look at in this game, if, in fact, everyone plays in terms of frontline starters, would be Rasheen Mathis and Derek Cox versus Roddy White and Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. I think those would be some matchups to watch early in the game. And then also I would look for John Abraham, you know, who had 13 sacks a year ago matched up against Eugene Monroe. Let's see what kind of progress Eugene has made to this point in his career. So far in training camp, he's done some good things, but this would be a great test for people to evaluate.
Had a couple of times where he let some pressure get in last week, so I know he'll be looking forward to that opportunity to kind of turn things around and get headed back in the right direction.
Yeah, and part of that was our backs got to chip better. We had two opportunities where we could have chipped the end to help our right tackle and help our left tackle. And, you know, sometimes you're banking on getting that help, and so you secure the inside and they got the outside or vice versa. And it's a true team sport, everyone working together. So it's not just the offensive linemen. It's backs, it's tight ends. And then it's a quarterback getting the ball out quick, too.
All right, wild card question, completely off the subject of the Falcons and Jaguars. Should Texas A&M be in the SEC?
I'll tell you, when I read that, I thought some of the SEC schools would be very interested in that from a recruiting standpoint
to get into the state
of Texas. But I like the way it is. I really do. So I won't get too involved in everything that's taking place right now at the college level. I think the reason why you're seeing a lot of these realignments and these conference championship games, because I think within the next 5 years you're going to see a playoff system at the Division 1A level.
Boy, I hope you're right. All right, that's the general manager, Gene Smith. Gene, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again on Monday, and of course we'll hear from you with Ryan Sexton before the game on Friday. Joe Fortunato at the controls. Hope your day-to-day is better than your birthday last Friday. For the general manager and Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday and good night from Jaguar Central.